Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hello. You are listening to the Friday, February 6th, 2026 edition of A Dose of Health. On today's program, why alcohol raises the risk of cancer from time. And new study sheds light on a beneficial compound in coffee and chocolate from the Washington Post. Plus, what's up with heartburn from prevention and more, time permitting. Here's our first report. Why alcohol raises the risk of cancer. Research links even one drink a week to an increased risk for multiple types of cancers. By Jeffrey Kluger from Time. Carcinogens, substances that increase cancer risk, are often obvious. Some with the most research backing their dangers are tobacco, radiation, and asbestos. Also in that category, alcohol. That, to a lot of people, comes as a surprise. According to a 2025 report by the U.S. Surgeon General's office, citing a 2019 study, less than half of Americans recognize alcohol as a carcinogen, compared to 91% for radiation and 89% for tobacco. A more recent 2025 study from JAMA Oncology found that nearly 53% of Americans do not know whether alcohol has any link to cancer at all. It does. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, lists seven cancers whose incidence is known to be increased by alcohol. Cancers of the mouth, throat, larynx, esophagus, liver, colon and rectum, and breast. Some studies also show a link to stomach, pancreatic, and prostate cancer. Using the very best data we have, comparing populations of drinkers and non-drinkers, it appears that even very low levels of drinking, one drink a week, are associated with a measurable increase in risk over time, says Dr. Ernest Hawk, head of prevention and population sciences at the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. When you're talking about cancer and alcohol, there's no safe level of exposure, he says. The increased wariness about alcohol from the scientific community is clashing with decreased caution from the federal government. Since the 1980s, federal dietary guidelines have urged Americans to limit their alcohol intake to no more than one drink a day for women and two for men. In January 2025, however, the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services issued new, far looser recommendations, saying that individuals should consume less alcohol for better overall health. The guidelines also said that pregnant women, people struggling with alcohol use disorder, and those taking medications or with medical conditions that could interact with alcohol should avoid drinking altogether. But it was the elimination of the previous recommendations that made headlines. The new dietary guidelines didn't necessarily help with the specifics, says Dr. Donald Hensrud, Associate Professor of Nutrition and Preventive Medicine at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. They say don't indulge in alcohol, but they didn't give any specific amount, so there's kind of an open-ended question at this point, he says. Drinkers like a certain limit. Drink moderately, and this is what moderate means, says Jennifer Hay, an attending psychologist in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. The new guidelines are valuable in telling people that less is best, but I definitely have concerns about vagueness, she says. It's not the recommendation I would have made, says Hawk. Dr. Mehmet Oz, administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, supported the new policy. There is alcohol on the dietary guidelines, but the implication is don't have it for breakfast, he said at a White House briefing. In the best case scenario, I don't think you should drink alcohol, but it does allow people an excuse to bond and socialize, and there's probably nothing healthier than having a good time with friends in a safe way, he says. The government's new approach, notwithstanding, most research does sound a clear alert, establishing a convincing link between alcohol and cancer. The National Cancer Institute estimates that alcohol played a role in about 5%, or nearly 100,000, Of the 1.8 million cancer cases diagnosed in the U.S. in 2019, and about 4%, or nearly 25,000, of the 600,000 deaths. Those are worrying numbers, but not everyone agrees they're reliable ones. Research into the alcohol cancer link relies on observational studies, asking populations of people if they do or don't drink, and then counting and comparing the number and type of cancers in both groups. That's very different from randomized clinical trials. We don't do studies where we ask people to smoke versus not smoke and follow them for 50 years, says Hawk. It's the same here because alcohol is a toxin. We don't tell folks, drink, and then let's see what happens to your body, he says. The observational approach leaves a lot of room for confounding factors to sneak in and influence the results, variables that could have been eliminated in a clinical study. People who drink do other things that may influence their lives in terms of exercise, smoking, diet, stress, says Dr. Larry Norton, medical director of the Evelyn H. Lauder Breast Center at Memorial Sloan Kettering. Even if alcohol is involved in cancer, the link could be indirect, says Norton. It could be the calories in alcohol. Obesity is a known risk factor for cancer. Observational data is not all that reliable. At the extremes, you get a clear message, but in more subtle cases, such as low to moderate alcohol consumption, you're basically extrapolating, he says. Researchers posit multiple mechanisms at work that can lead to disease. The first involves acetaldehyde, a toxic metabolite that is produced when the body breaks down alcohol. Acetaldehyde can damage DNA and proteins, which can lead to the uncontrolled cellular growth that defines cancer. Acetaldehyde can induce mutations, says Hawk, much like tobacco can induce mutations. Alcohol can also lead to the creation of free radicals, reactive oxygen molecules that can damage DNA and proteins, as well as fats. The reason so many healthy diets include antioxidant sources such as blueberries, raspberries, dark leafy greens, dark chocolate, and green tea is to battle free radicals. But consuming antioxidants is counterproductive if you're also consuming a substance like alcohol that fuels free radical production. Alcohol generates these reactive oxygen species, which cause inflammation, Hawk says. Inflammation helps to heal wounds when it's controlled, but chronic, low-grade levels of inflammation are damaging to many parts of the body, he says. Additionally, alcohol can elevate the level of hormones, particularly estrogen, by impairing the ability of the liver to break down the hormone. This leads to higher estrogen levels in the blood, which in turn increases the risk of breast cancer. Many tissues in a woman's body are sensitive to estrogen, which increases cell proliferation, says Hawk. The more aggressively cells are dividing, the likelier it is that there will be mutations or copying errors that lead to cancer. The increased risks of breast cancer start at very modest levels of alcohol consumption, says Hensrud, less than a drink a day. Overall, women are thought to be more susceptible to the carcinogenic effect of alcohol than men, says Hensrud, due partly to their lower average body weight, meaning any amount of alcohol goes metabolically further, and partly to lower levels of gastric alcohol dehydrogenase, an enzyme in the stomach that initiates the digestion of alcohol. According to the Surgeon General's report, the lifetime risk of developing any type of cancer goes from about 16% if a woman consumes less than one drink per week to 19% if she has one drink daily to nearly 22% for two drinks daily. For men, the figure is 10% for less than one drink a week, 11% for one drink daily, and 13% for two drinks daily. Finally, for both men and women, alcohol interferes with the absorption of nutrients, especially vitamin B1, B12, folic acid, and zinc. Interfering with things like folate can set tissues up for cancer, says Hawk. At the same time, alcohol makes it easier for the cells in the mouth to absorb carcinogens, which is especially dangerous for people who both drink and smoke or use other tobacco products. One December 2025 study conducted in India and published in BMJ Global Health found that just one drink a day was linked with a 50% increase in the risk of oral cancer Combined with using chewing tobacco, that figure rose to 62%. Where this leaves people who drink is unclear. If the risk of oral cancer jumps with just a single drink a day, and breast cancer risk climbs with even less than that, is there such a thing as a safe level of alcohol? Maybe not. Anything that causes inflammation is associated with some cancer effects, says Norton. Alcohol surely checks that box, but just as there are gradations in the amount people drink, there may be, too, gradations in the dangers consumption poses. It's dose-dependent, says Norton. For sure, people who drink a lot of alcohol, in the range of 4 or 5 or more drinks a day, have a lot of adverse health effects, he says. The data, he says, are less clear at the level of 1 drink a day. There's realistic scientific uncertainty in this regard. Hayes still counsels caution. 2 drinks a day for men and 1 drink a day for women was the standard, but that already increases your cancer risk, she says. Eliminating the danger means eliminating alcohol, but even that may not be a perfect solution. A history of drinking may have done lasting damage that could still lead to cancer, in much the way a history of smoking does. There's some decline in risk if you quit, says Hensrud, but there's also a sort of memory there as well, so our total amount that we drink over our lifetime probably does make a difference, he says. Still, as Hay puts it, less is likely best, with abstinence, if it's achievable, optimal. The risk is measurable, says Hawk, and it's avoidable. Up next, new study sheds light on a beneficial compound found in coffee and chocolate. Theobromine, an alkaloid found in dark chocolate and coffee, is associated with slower cellular aging, a study suggests, by Krista Scoba from The Washington Post. If you enjoy dark chocolate or coffee, or both, you may be benefiting from a substance found in these products that is linked to a reduction in cellular aging. A study published in the journal Aging found that people with higher blood levels of an alkaloid called theobromine seem to have slower cellular aging as measured by epigenetic clocks, models that estimate aging based on molecular biomarkers. Most abundant in cocoa, theobromine is also found in smaller amounts in coffee and tea. But before you start eating more dark chocolate and drinking more cups of coffee, know that the study found an association, not a causal link, and that it didn't suggest how much you would have to eat or drink to potentially derive an aging-related benefit. The researchers used data from participants in 2 groups, 509 women from the Twins UK cohort and 1,160 men and women from the Cora group in Germany. Both groups had an average age of 60. They measured the amount of theobromine in the participants' blood and analyzed their DNA using models that estimate aging based on molecular biomarkers. The researchers discovered that higher levels of theobromine in the blood was associated with a reduced pace of aging, as seen by 2 of these clocks. When the team investigated whether other substances in dark chocolate had that effect, they found the link persisted only with theobromine. Can dark chocolate really affect cellular aging? Much of how we age is determined by our genes. But epigenetic factors such as our behaviors, environments, and diets can turn some genes on or shut others off through different processes. One such mechanism is DNA methylation, the focus of the new study. What we were looking for here are the chemical tags that can be added onto your DNA, said Jordana Bell, a professor in epigenomics at King's College London and the lead author of the study. Consider it the grammar of your genome, said Jose M. Ordovas, a senior scientist and leader of the Precision Nutrition and Healthy Aging Directive at Tufts University, who was not involved in the study. These markers don't alter the fixed sequence of your DNA, but the tags, like punctuation marks, affect how they are expressed, he said. DNA methylation patterns also shift with age, allowing for the development of epigenetic clocks that estimate biological rather than chronological age. Using these clocks to compare epigenetic markers of aging among the study's participants, the researchers found a link between higher levels of theobromine in the blood and reduced signs of cellular aging. After running further tests to see whether other cocoa compounds, including caffeine, showed similar patterns, Bell and her team discovered it occurred only with theobromine. What our results are suggesting is that theobromine might be affecting the activity of genes, Bell said, and then that contributes to aging and health. It's also possible that something synergistic is going on with the theobromine and other chocolate components they didn't measure in the study, such as polyphenols, Bell said. These anti-inflammatory compounds, which are also found in dark chocolate, are linked to better brain function, a more varied gut microbiome, and lower risks of conditions such as cancer, heart disease, and diabetes. What are the study limitations? While the findings are interesting, and who doesn't want to hope that their favorite treat might be a fountain of youth, there are a few limitations to recognize before you eat up. The study didn't dig into diet, so it's not clear whether people had high levels of theobromine because of chocolate. They did not measure the intake of chocolate. They looked at a biomarker of something that is in chocolate, Ordovas said. One of the sample groups did complete a food questionnaire that asked how frequently the participants ate chocolate, but it didn't delve into specifics such as what kind they were eating, the percentage of cocoa it had, or how much of it they ate. The data also comes from one single point in time, so the study wasn't able to see how theobromine levels over weeks, months, or years might relate to aging rates, Bell said. You need to see things moving one time after another, Ordovas said. That brings more confidence. And epigenetic clocks aren't set in stone. These are dynamic estimates, Bell said. It just means that at this point in time, looking at your DNA, we estimate that you seem to be aging a little bit slower or faster than we would expect based on your chronological age. This is a good thing because you can use this knowledge to guide diet or other health interventions to change your biological age estimate, she said. What does this mean for choosing chocolate? The findings about theobromine add to what we know about the other health-promoting compounds in dark chocolate, such as polyphenols. And here are some recommendations about dark chocolate from Alexis Supon, an outpatient dietitian at the Bariatric and Metabolic Institute with the Cleveland Clinic. While anything above 50% cocoa solids can be considered dark chocolate, that range is a big one, and you'd probably be better served aiming for 70% or greater. The higher the percentage, the more bitter it will be, but it will also bring a higher concentration of the beneficial compounds and less of the not-so-healthy things like the saturated fat and the sugar, she says. Make sure that cocoa is the first ingredient listed on the label. Ideally, you'd want just three ingredients, cocoa, sugar, and cocoa butter. Choose chocolate that isn't Dutch processed, which is sometimes listed on the label. This alkalization process mellows its flavor, but also strips away some of the polyphenols. You're not getting quite as much antioxidant power, Supon said. For balance in your diet, keep the rest of your daily added sugar in check. A one-ounce serving of dark chocolate can provide about one-third of the daily upper limit for women and one-quarter for men. Dark chocolate can contain higher levels of harmful metals such as cadmium and lead, which are riskier for pregnant people or younger children, Supon said. Consumer Reports has a list of levels in many popular brands. You can make an informed decision. As long as the chocolate fits this criteria, what form you choose to consume it in, whether in a mug or bar, shouldn't matter. But when used in baking, say that dark chocolate cake or rich gooey cookies, keep in mind that the cocoa is competing with ingredients such as butter, sugar, and flour, so you're probably taking in less of the good products, Supon said. Finally, if you aren't a fan of chocolate, don't force yourself to eat it simply for some type of cellular benefits that theobromine might bring. After all, methylation is involved in aging, but it is a tiny percentage compared with all the many other factors, Ordovas said. These include your diet as a whole, physical activity, sleep, and stress levels. This is one tiny little sliver, and it's a great reason to not feel bad about having an ounce of dark chocolate today, Supon said. Up next, what's up with heartburn? Here's how to soothe the searing pain in your chest, by Caleb Lanton, from Prevention. There's the heartache you feel after a bad breakup, and then there's the everyday type that manifests as burning in your chest, and neither actually has anything to do with your heart. The sensation, which often includes a sour taste in your mouth and can seem worse after a meal or when you're lying down, comes from acid flowing up from the stomach into the esophagus. This happens when the lower esophageal sphincter, or LES, a valve that is supposed to keep the acid in your stomach from splashing up, weakens, relaxes, or doesn't close all the way, explains James J. Lee, M.D., a gastroenterologist at Providence St. Joseph Hospital in Orange County, California. Acidic foods are a prime heartburn culprit, as are large meals, especially ones that contain fatty foods. Foods that are high in saturated fat, including fried foods, fatty cuts of meat, butter, full-fat cheese, and pastries, can relax the LES as well as cause delayed gastric emptying, which increases your esophagus's exposure to stomach acids, says Gianna Di Maria, RD, CDN, an instructor of medicine at New York Medical College. Pregnancy and weight gain can also cause heartburn, as extra pressure on the stomach pushes acid up. Hormonal changes from pregnancy and menopause may exacerbate heartburn, too. How to douse the flame. Avoid triggers such as tomatoes, citrus, fatty, and spicy foods. Eat smaller portions. Heavy meals are more likely to relax the LES. Build in time after eating before sleep. If symptoms flare up when you're horizontal, allow at least 3 hours for digestion before bedtime. Also, Dr. Lee recommends sleeping on your left side, supported by pillows, to keep acids in their proper place. When to see a doctor. If dietary changes don't help, ask about OTC antacids and histamine blockers or meds such as proton pump inhibitors, which reduce the amount of acid in your stomach. If you get heartburn more than twice a week, get checked for gastroesophageal reflux disease, or GERD, which can increase inflammation in the esophagus and potentially lead to precancerous changes in the esophageal lining, says Neha Mather, M.D., a gastroenterologist at Houston Methodist. Up next, the real deal on those probiotic sodas from Consumer Reports on Health. Some so-called healthy sodas are promoted as being good for your digestive tract. They contain either probiotics, which are good bacteria that live in your gut, or prebiotics, fibers like inulin or chicory root, which feed the good bacteria. It's possible that having one or two of these sodas a day may help with problems like constipation and gas, says Carol Johnston, Ph.D., Senior Associate Dean in the College of Health Solutions at Arizona State University in Phoenix. But they aren't the best way to get those compounds. When you choose food that contains good bacteria and fiber, you get a variety of types, not just one or two, as you find in these sodas. Fermented foods like yogurt, kefir, sauerkraut and kimchi have beneficial bacteria. Fruits, vegetables, grains, and seeds are fiber-packed. But if you're drinking one of these sodas in place of a sugar-sweetened one, that could be a huge benefit for your health, Johnston says. The small amount of sugar substitutes they contain is likely to be less harmful than the sugar they replace, she says. Still, it's best to keep your intake to a minimum. In Consumer Reports tests, our experts liked Culture Pop soda because it's sweetened only with fruit juice and has 45 to 50 calories per can. And finally, from Consumer Reports on Health, happiness habits. Going to a concert, an art exhibit, a farmer's market, or a sports game may have a bigger payoff than you'd expect. Adults in a University of South Australia study who frequently attended these sorts of events rated their well-being higher than those who went out less or not at all. Feelings of excitement may play a role. And the source is the Journal of Tourism Research. Thank you for joining us for A Dose of Health. I'm Emily O'Keefe.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org. Or by calling 303-786-7777.